1 Corinthians 11:4 through 11:6, the 30th talk in a series on 1 Corinthians, was presented by Ron Julian on November 23, 2003, at Reformation Fellowship. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2003. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole, for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved.
Well, we're back in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 this morning. As I explained last week, this is a very hard passage, and I'm asking you to bear with me. I like to indicate when I'm teaching from the Bible my level of confidence in what it is I'm saying and how certain I am that what I'm saying is what Paul meant to say. And so I'm just trying to have truth in advertising here and make it real clear to you that my level of confidence is not high when it comes to this passage, because there are a lot of difficulties in it. So let me ask two questions to start out. Why do we care about this passage at all? I mean, why hammer on it when it's so difficult? I think there's a minor reason and a major reason. The minor reason is we would like to know whether Paul has something specific to say to us about the way we do things. In other words, is he actually suggesting that it is inappropriate for women to pray or prophesy without something covering their heads? Is he saying that's a universal principle that ought to happen? Is he saying that women in general ought to be having their heads covered all the time? Or would he say, no, it's just a cultural issue and you guys are fine? We would like to know which of those things is the case. And you're probably aware that there is far from agreement among Christians as to whether or not Paul is saying to us, yes, women ought to have something on their heads. That seems to me the minor reason why we're interested in the passage. The major reason we're interested in the passage is that in defending his perspective on this question, Paul makes some very interesting statements about men and women. Man is the head of the woman. Woman is man's glory. Woman was made for man. Those are very provocative statements, and they seem to be pointing to something fairly important that itself goes beyond the question of whether you have something on your head or not. He seems to be saying something about the nature of men and women, something about the nature of marriage, perhaps, and we'd like to understand, if we can, what it is that he's getting at there. Because there he's appealing to the scriptures, and he's appealing to the way things are, and saying, because of these things, we ought to conduct ourselves in a certain way. So that's why we try to see what it is he's saying. My second question is, should we be discouraged that this passage is so hard to figure out what it is that it's saying? I mean, should we get skeptical and cynical about the Bible itself? And I want to answer very definitely no, I don't think we should respond in that way. We have to have a right picture, though, to start out with, of what sort of book the Bible is. If the Bible were a step-by-step instruction manual that I have been given to tell me exactly what to do in every situation so that my life will go the best, then I might be discouraged about finding a passage like this, which has many difficulties in it, many difficulties of translation and finding the cultural background and figuring out the hidden arguments that Paul is not saying in the context. And if you had a very complicated but important piece of machinery you were trying to put together, and you got an instruction book, and every couple of pages you came across a section that was incomprehensible, and you couldn't figure out what it was that it was saying, and if you didn't get it right, that was going to blow up, but you don't know which way is right, that would be very discouraging, and you would rightly curse the instruction book and think, what kind of instruction book is this that isn't clear enough for me to know what it is I'm supposed to do? But I would argue that what we have in the Bible is a rich and complex story of how God entered into human history and revealed himself. In this age, especially since the time of Jesus, it has been the project of God's people to work together on understanding that revelation. The general outlines of that revelation are clear. Some of the more important details become clear if we work at understanding them. We can make progress towards understanding what it is that God was saying through his apostles and prophets in the scriptures. But some of the details are hazier than others, and this is one of those passages where that's the case. It's a unique situation. It's a short passage. We don't know what the situation was into which it was being spoken. There's not a lot in the Bible like it. We don't have lots of other places where the same issues are addressed, although there are some. And as it happens, the grammar and linguistic issues involved here in this passage are rather complicated. There are places where we don't know, at least we have a lot of arguments about what is going on. So when we come to a passage like this, it seems to me that the appropriate response is to be people who care about the truth, acknowledge that the Apostle Paul was the representative of Christ that he claimed to be, and try our best to understand what it is he was saying to the Corinthians in this particular situation. And in the end, we may have to acknowledge at this point there is some uncertainty as to the specifics of what it is that Paul was trying to tell them. But I think it is very much worth our while to try to understand what it is that Paul was getting at. So I want to start first with the minor question, what I'm calling the minor question, that is the specifics of the practice of women having something on their head when they prayed or prophesied, men not having something on their head when they prayed and prophesied. What does that have to do with the culture? Is it a cultural practice, or is it in fact a universal command that Paul is giving? So, and that is one of the questions that people often ask. Is the issue here cultural or timeless? Is it rooted in culture, or is it something that ought always to be the case? Christians are very split on that question. Many, obviously, if you went to many churches in Eugene, you would find women praying and with nothing on their heads. So obviously a lot of Christians have come to the conclusion that what Paul is saying here is not binding on us today. It's one way or another, it has to do with the culture into which he was speaking. But there are others who would come back and argue, how can it be cultural? Paul doesn't argue from the culture in this passage. He argues from the scriptures. He goes back to the creation order, the way God made men and women, and he argues from that. And he argues from what he calls nature, the way things are, so to speak. Has nature changed? Have the scriptures changed? No. So how could it be a cultural issue? So I wanted to make a couple of comments about that at first so that we can be clear on that, and at least you can be clear on where I'm coming from on that question. First of all, just because Paul appeals to the scriptures and to nature doesn't mean that the issue does not have a cultural component to it. Suppose in our culture there were Christian men that we knew that whenever they knew that they were going to be in the company of single, attractive women, they are married men, but they remove their wedding rings. Okay, now suppose that Paul were around today and he was writing to them. He might tell them to keep their wedding rings on. And he might, in making that appeal, appeal to the scriptures, the nature of marriage, the call to faithfulness, the fact that the two become one flesh, and so on, and making a picture for what marriage is and why it is inappropriate for a married man to be trying to pretend that he's not married when he's in the company of women who are not his wife. The principles that he would appeal to in that situation are eternal. But the fact is that when he says in his letter, you keep your wedding rings on, it wouldn't necessarily be the case that in another culture at another time, people would read his letter and say, well, we don't have the practice of wedding rings. I guess we had better start it. because it's not the practice of wedding rings per se he's interested in, it's what wedding rings mean in our culture, the signal that they send or that they fail to send if you don't have it on. But given that, he's appealing to timeless principles about the character of God, God's purposes in creating man and women, and the purpose for marriage and so on. So I hope that distinction is clear. I would argue that, yes, in this passage there are eternal truths being appealed to. That is, we are appealing to the scriptures and the way things are to determine what is God's intention for men and women. And that intention does not change. But it is still quite possible that what Paul is doing is appealing to God's unchanging intentions for man and woman to tell them how they ought to conduct themselves in their particular cultural situation. And so for us then, if the cultural situation has changed, if head coverings do not communicate what they did at the time that Paul was writing, then those unchanging principles might dictate different behavior. In our case, it might be a matter of indifference whether a woman has something on her head or not, because it doesn't mean anything. Just like in another culture, it might be a matter of indifference whether you wear a ring on this finger or not, because in that culture it doesn't mean anything. But in our culture it very much does, and it makes a difference in how I behave. Okay, so would Paul's letter, if we imagine that situation, Paul wrote a letter to the men in our culture saying, you keep your wedding rings on, and someone in a different culture that doesn't have wedding rings, would it be relevant to them, that passage? Yes, it would. Not because they ought to start wearing wedding rings, but because the principles that Paul is appealing to, they need to understand so that they can apply them in their cultural situation. They might apply them very differently, but in their cultural situation, the same principles are going to apply. So that's what I would argue. The argument that this is a strictly a cultural issue cannot be right, because Paul is appealing to unchanging truths. But the perspective that therefore everything he commands here is binding on everyone at all time, that's not necessarily the case either, because the question is, how is he taking the unchanging principles and applying them to the particular situation that you find yourself in? Now, it could be, we have yet to determine, it could be that those unchanging principles dictate to women today that they ought to pray and prophesy with their heads covered. I'm not saying that that's impossible. That might be the case. But it might not be as well. The principle is going to work itself out depending on what the principle is and what the cultural realities that it is applied to are. Okay. Now, my second point about this question: is there something binding about women wearing something on their head, or is it partly related to the cultural situation in which it's spoken? This is a very difficult question to answer, because the historical circumstances, the cultural situation into which Paul is writing, is far from clear to us if we look historically. And let me try to tell you some of the complexities of what we find here. Paul is writing to the Corinthians. Corinth is in Greece. So we might think, okay, basically it's Greek people that he's writing to here, and it is Greek practices that he doesn't want to offend. But we need to understand that Corinth was a Roman colony. Corinth had basically been destroyed and rebuilt by the Romans, and many of the people who lived in Corinth were like freed slaves, Romans, who were given a place to live after they were freed. Here, well, let's set you up in Corinth. So many of the people in Corinth were not Greek culturally, but they were Roman culturally. And there is a difference in the way Romans and Greeks did things. But at the same time, Paul is writing to a church which started with Jews and Gentile God-fearers who were familiar with the synagogue situation. So the church Very likely, as we're looking at the cultural situation into which Paul is writing, it is made up of Greeks and Romans and Jews in terms of their cultural practices. Which of those is the determining cultural practice that Paul is concerned with? Because there are differences among those practices, and if you were to read the literature on 1 Corinthians, I can point you to literature that each one of those pieces of literature would argue very strongly that it is the Greek custom that Paul has in mind. No, it is the Roman custom that Paul has in mind. No, it is the Jewish custom that Paul has in mind. Now, let's complicate that question further, or at least bring in another fact. Maybe it won't complicate it. Maybe it will help. But Paul says, when he talks about this, that all the churches of God have the same practice. So I think actually that it's a little bit misleading to ask the question, what was the practice in Corinth? Because Paul seems to have set this up universally. That is, his advice is the same to the churches in Asia Minor, presumably in the church in Antioch where he came from. So we're talking about from the far west in Greece, moving east through Asia Minor and over into the Palestine area. He's saying all the churches have the same practice. Well, culturally, if you were to look at those cultures, they're quite different in the way they do things. Tarsus, where Paul is from, we have evidence that it was the practice for Jewish women in Tarsus not only to cover their heads, but to wear veils altogether. They were quite conservative in Tarsus. And yet, the sources that we have indicate that that was very far from the practice for Greek women farther east. So Paul has set up, he is suggesting that there is an appropriate way to respond to this that all the churches are practicing. And yet, if we were to look at the cultural situation across the Mediterranean, there are a variety of cultural realities that we face there. So that suggests that there is some underlying reality that is in common with those in all of those cultures that Paul would be thinking would determine why he's suggesting to everyone that they follow this practice. Okay. There's another fact that's interesting here in this regard. This often comes up in the modern literature on 1 Corinthians. Many people think this is determinative in understanding what Paul's doing. We know for a fact that Roman men, many of them, had the practice of covering their heads when they prayed, prophesied, or offered sacrifices. They had a kind of a cloak that was loose that you could just take and pull up over your head. And we have many pictures and statues and descriptions of Roman men in what Paul would have seen as pagan worship practices, pulling up the covering over their head when they prayed or prophesied or when they offered sacrifices to their gods. Did Greek men cover their heads in such a way? The evidence seems to suggest that they probably didn't. Jewish men, now that gets really controversial because we know, of course, that ultimately Jewish men ended up covering their heads. But what was the case at Paul's time? When we read the Talmud, which is a collection of writings from the rabbis over a historical period, the Talmud is written after the time of Paul, but some of its traditions go back into the time of the New Testament, but we don't know which ones, and we don't know exactly how it works. The Talmud would suggest that men in worship at the synagogue would have covered their heads. But is that in fact what was happening culturally at the time of the New Testament? I can show you books that say yes, absolutely. And I can show you books that say, no, of course not. So it's not an easy question to answer. What is it that was happening at the time? I am not aware of any evidence that suggests that Jewish men definitely did cover their heads at this time. There's also the fact that while it's true that Roman men covered their heads in worship settings often, when they would meet someone on the street and they had their head covered and they wanted to show respect, like this is a superior of someone of significance, they would uncover their heads. In fact, Plutarch asked the question, why is it that Roman men cover their heads when they offer sacrifices to the gods, but uncover their heads when they meet a superior in the street? And he's asking the question, why is it, wouldn't you seem like there would ought to be a consistency between those two things? If it's a sign of respect to take it off, then shouldn't you take it off for the god? Or if it's a sign of respect to put it on, shouldn't you put it on for the superior as well? And I don't remember, he proposes some explanation for why that might be. Okay, so that's a lot of historical information that does not all point neatly in the same direction. So now we ask the question, why is Paul saying that a man who prays with his head uncovered disgraces his head? Given all of that that we just talked about, why would he say that if you pray with your head uncovered, you are disgracing your head? And by that he probably means the one who is your head. So he would mean the man would be shaming Christ, probably, in saying that. Why does he say that? There are a number of options. The issue isn't head coverings at all, it's long hair. That's an argument that many make. They would argue from the language that it could be interpreted, that it's not covered or uncovered, but it's if the man has something hanging down from the head, as they argue, and they're saying it's long hair is the issue. I'm willing to go there. I have tried to make that argument work, and I don't think it works in this context. But if somebody can put it together for me, I'm willing to go there. Another option would be, okay, we know that Roman men, many of them in worship, put coverings on their head. So Paul's concern is for Christian practices to not reflect pagan practices. The Romans did it in worshiping their idols, and so it's important for Christians to do something different so that they don't look like the idol worshippers. That's a possibility, I suppose. He doesn't really hint at anything like that in the passage, although you might argue we're looking for explanations no matter how you put it together. But part of the problem with that is the evidence seems to suggest that there's a multiplicity of practices out there, and that Greek men, in worshiping their idols, didn't have something on their head. So if I'm trying to not look like the pagans, how do I decide that I'm not looking like the Roman pagans instead I'm not looking like the Greek pagans? And anyway, Jewish practices, men may not have had something on their heads when they worshiped, but the priests had head coverings when they ministered in the temple. So how is it that Paul came up with this idea that somehow if I have something on my head, I'm looking like a pagan? Why couldn't I be looking like those in the temple who are showing respect to God by having their heads covered? I mean, how do we decide that all of that comes together? So that's complicated. That's hard to know. If that was his argument, he doesn't make it, and it's hard to know why exactly he would be thinking that. Another option is that Paul just wanted to arbitrarily create a practice in prayer that set Christians apart from everyone else. However everybody else is doing it, we're going to do it this way. I want you to have a distinctive practice that marks you as a Christian when you do this. And this is the way we're all going to do it. The problem is, if that's the reason he did it, it seems strange that he argues that someone who prays with his head uncovered shames or disgraces his head. I mean, if it's just an arbitrary practice that you could do it either way, but I just decided we're going to do it this way, it's hard to know why he thinks that there's some shame associated with it if you don't. So that one doesn't quite make sense to me. Another option is the issue is not cultural. Paul really believes that it is wrong for a Christian man to pray to God with his head covered, and that there is something intrinsic, something in the nature of things, that suggests that if I were praying to God and I had something on my head, I would be disgracing my head in doing that. I would be bringing shame upon him. I think you could sort of try to push and make some sort of sense out of that, but I have not been able to convince myself that he actually thinks that that's the case, that there's something intrinsic about the nature of things that suggests that that's the appropriate sign, especially when you think about the fact that the priests did have their heads covered, and he doesn't seem to be suggesting that they were sending the message somehow that they were disgracing God or something like that. So that one's hard. I can't go there. So where we seem to arrive is, in spite of what seems to be somewhat conflicting cultural evidence that is hard to read, and some of it might suggest the opposite of what I'm suggesting, Paul knew that in that culture, basically, fundamentally, it would have been seen as keeping something on your head while you were praying to God would have been understood to be a sign of disrespect. So it was the sort of symbol like it used to be in our culture when men wore hats, that if you met someone or if you went into church or you went into some place where you were going to show your respect for the person or the place that you were, you would take your hat off. That something like that was the cultural reality that Paul was appealing to. And that's why he was saying, that's why you men pray without something on your heads, because it's a sign of respect to do that. And if you were to keep it on, you would be showing culturally disrespect for the person that you were talking to. Even though the evidence is somewhat ambiguous on that regard, in the passage itself, it makes, of all the options available, it seems to me that that's the option that makes the most sense. Okay, now, we come to the equally troublesome question of what is the cultural situation for the women? What facts do we have to go on there? Well, we have the fact, as I mentioned before, that in Tarsus, married Jewish women covered their heads. In fact, they wore veils. But it seems to have been the general practice that Jewish women, married Jewish women at the time, would cover their heads. Not necessarily a veil, but would cover their hair, that they would have something on their hair. We have evidence from archaeology, you know, from pictures and from literature and stuff, that it's kind of mixed when it comes to Roman women and Greek women. Some of them did cover their heads, but we see many examples where they did not cover their heads as well. And so, once again, it's difficult to say from the evidence which culture are we talking about and what was the practice. It's a little hard to say what exactly the practice was. And then there are some other facts that some people point to that can complicate the question. In pagan religions, women participated as well as the men. And what did they do when they were praying to their gods? Well, some of them covered their heads. Some of them let down their hair. They would uncover their heads and let down their hair when they were participating in ecstatic sort of pagan rituals and stuff like that. So, what do these facts do for us when we try to decide why is it that Paul says that a woman praying or prophesied with her head uncovered disgraces her head? What has led him to say that, given all of the realities? Well, one of the options that people propose is that it's not head covering that is being talked about, it's hair. And that the issue is that the women are letting their hair down. Women with long hair at the time would have worn it up. They may not have covered it, the Greeks and the Romans, the argument would be, but they would have worn it up, and that it was disrespectful, disreputable is the word I mean, to wear your hair down. And So what the women here are doing is emulating the pagan practice of letting their hair down when they prophesy. Once again, I'm willing to be convinced, but I can't make that one work in this context either at this point. I don't think that's what was going on. Okay? A second option is that it's not a cultural issue for Paul, but Paul believes that it is inappropriate for a woman, or at least for a married woman, to be in public without covering her head. Or maybe he believes only that it is inappropriate for a woman to not be covered when she's praying or prophesying, at least. And again, that one, you could probably, if you went a certain direction, you could make a stronger case for Paul believing that that was not culturally relative, but I don't buy that either. I don't think that you can make that work ultimately. I don't think that he believes that that's a universal truth. So I am forced where I am right now to the conclusion that in spite of the somewhat complicated and conflicting evidence that we have about the culture, that Paul knew that culturally women uncovering their heads would be understood to be sending some sort of message that he thought was wrong. It was understood culturally in a certain way. Again, this makes the most sense to me, but I am somewhat troubled by the conflicting evidence that's out there. Now, I don't know. There are so many issues involved with this. I think if I had to guess now, I would guess that Paul is most influenced by the general practice among the Jews, especially in the synagogues, which would have been the model for the Christian congregations. I think it's likely at this time that it was a fairly universal practice that Jewish men had not gotten to that spot where they covered their heads in prayer, but rather it was the other way around, that at this point they removed what was on their head to show respect, and that married Jewish women definitely kept their hair covered. And that this would have been more or less standard throughout the Mediterranean, and this may be the cultural reality that Paul has in mind throughout. There are a significant number of Jews in all of the churches that he's dealing with, and Paul is a Jew himself. So not that he is making normative what Jews do, but the issue is, if we're asking the question, we're trying to send the right sort of signals here, the model that he has in mind is what the Jewish members in the congregation would have understood by the message being sent by either covering or not uncovering your head. And I hope you're all understanding the tentativeness with which I propose these things. They're difficult questions. Okay. So in the light of those things now, what can we say? What was it that was happening in Corinth? What is it that they were doing, and what was it that Paul wanted them to be doing? Is it that Paul wanted the men not to cover their heads, but the men were rebelliously covering their heads because that's what they always used to do, and by gum, that's what we're going to do now? And the women, he wanted to cover their heads, but they were saying, no, we don't want to cover their heads. So his advice is to both, you guys need to switch it. You men, stop covering up your heads. You women, start covering up your heads. Is that the situation that he's speaking into? Is it that everyone usually went around with their head uncovered, but he was saying, that's fine normally, but when you're praying and prophesying, you women, you need to put something on your heads. You can walk around however you want normally, but by gum, if you're going to pray to God, you get something up there. Is that what it was that he was saying? Well, at this point, and with all of the reservations that I have mentioned before, I won't keep mentioning them, but you just dial it in the whole time I'm going along here. At this point, I find what makes the most sense is the proposal that Jack has made concerning this passage, that fundamentally there was this cultural reality that men would remove their head covering as a sign of respect to someone, and that's what they were doing in this situation when they were praying or prophesying, as a respect for the God that they were speaking to or speaking for. But this raised the question then for the married women, should we do the same thing? This would in particular have been a new issue for Jewish women who would have not participated in the synagogue service before, but in the Christian services, both men and women are participating in a way that women did not before. So now the question becomes, should I join the men when I pray or prophesy in showing my respect to God by removing what I have on my head to show my respect to God? The problem is then that culturally speaking, a woman's head covering communicates something different than a man's head covering does. And for a woman to remove her head covering is saying something different in that culture than it would have said when a man removed what was on his head. That makes a lot of sense to me. So, what sort of a problem is he speaking to here? Are the women being rebellious? It's possible, but it might not even be that. Notice that Paul does not have strong words in this passage for anybody. He starts this out by saying, I praise you that you keep the traditions that I've given you. But when he moves on to the next one to talk about the Lord's Supper, he says, I don't praise you in this. And he has very harsh words for them, is the way they're conducting themselves. But he doesn't have very harsh words for anybody in this section. It may just be that there is genuine confusion among them as to what it is they ought to do. We're trying to Paul, to follow what it is you've suggested here, but the women have run into this problem, so what should we do? And it's possible that they were confused, that they themselves would not have wanted to show disrespect for their husbands, but they didn't want to show disrespect for God either, and they were confused as to what to do. It's even possible that other people were pressuring them to do it. It's possible that some of the male leadership had decided that this is the way it ought to be, and those women shouldn't be showing disrespect to God by having something on their head. That's possible. That seems like a strange thing to suggest, but there's a reason why I might propose that as a possibility for the situation that I'll talk to you about later. But we don't know exactly what it was. Were the women saying, we're going to be just like the men and show respect to God and I don't care what it says about my husband? Or were they confused, or were they being pressured by other people? We don't know. But the situation would be that Paul is trying to speak clarity into this. What are the principles that the men and women ought to be thinking about as you're making this decision? How am I going to conduct myself? When I pray and prophesy in public, what am I going to do? Am I going to have my head covered, which communicates a certain thing? Am I going to have my head uncovered, which communicates a certain thing? How do I deal with that question? So, that's what I think is going on. Paul is prescribing that they should conduct themselves in the light of certain cultural signals. A man uncovered his head to show respect for a superior. A married woman kept her head covered to show respect for her husband. In that situation, men should pray without a covering, and women should keep theirs on. That's what I think is happening. Out of, you understand, you know, there's those forks in the road, and then the forks in the road, and the forks in the road. I ended up over here. You have to back up and look how many decisions I made along the way to get there, but that's where I would be right now. Okay, I'm going to try to push ahead here. We got started kind of late, and I'm going to try to talk a little bit more, if that's okay with you. Well, what are you going to do? I guess you could get up and leave, but let's now actually look at a few verses to see how this works itself out. Starting in verse 4, chapter 11, every man praying or prophesying with something on his head disgraces his head, but every woman praying or prophesying with her head uncovered disgraces her head, for she is one and the same with her having her head shaved. For if a woman does not cover her head, let her also cut off her hair. But if it is disgraceful for a woman to cut off her hair or to shave her head, let her cover her head. Okay. I don't think that in this situation there is any controversy about the men. I don't think he's telling them, you get those head coverings off. I think he is reminding them of the rationale that they already would have understood as to why they remove their head coverings when they're praying or prophesying. The issue, the controversial issue, is what the women should do. Because you'll notice in this section, by far, the bulk of Paul's argument has to do with how you should think about the relationship between men and women so that the women can figure out how it is they're going to do this. Okay. I believe it's kind of interesting. The question is, how do you handle your head that is this up here? Are you going to have something on it or not? But Paul is making his argument based on how what you have on your head reflects on your head, meaning the one who is your, the one in this relationship that is the prominent one, as we talked about last time, and I'll go into that more a little bit later. But I think he's aware that he's kind of got this play on words going, that what I want to tell you to do is you need to have something on your head so you don't disgrace your head. And the head involved is the one who is superior to you or the one who is prominent in the relationship, because he just got done saying that. He said, the head of every man is Christ, the head of every woman is man, the head of Christ is God. Then, a man praying without something on his head, or with something on his head, disgraces his head. Well, why did he just tell us who the man's head is if he wasn't going to use it? And I think he is using it. So, but he's aware that there's this kind of play here of head/head. Okay. Now, Paul's first argument for the woman then is to uncover your head shames your head, shames the man, because if you do that, you are one and the same as a woman with a shaved head. That's a weird thing to say. Paul, every time you think you see of where he's starting to go, he says things in such a way in this section where it says, wait, that wasn't what I was expecting you to say. Okay, so this is difficult. Why? What exactly is it that's involved with this? Here's how I would put it together right now. One of the many forks in the road where I have made a decision, and I've tried to explain to you what that decision is. I think that culturally, the issue of head coverings has to do not with veiling the face. That's not the issue here, but the issue has to do with hair. And the idea is that in many cultures, it has been true, well, in all cultures it's true to a certain extent, that a woman's hair is part of her beauty, and that long, luxurious hair on a woman adorned with various things is a very common thing to happen, and it is very common in a number of cultures for married women to cover their hair, which is quite elaborate and long and made up and adorned and so on, but it is covered. And the idea is that her hair, her beauty, is not for other men, it is for her husband, or something along those lines. So to cover the head, for Jewish married women to cover the head, was a way of indicating, I am not available. I am married. I already have a husband to whom I belong. I am no longer available. Something along those lines. And that hair is a part of the issue because I am covering a part of me. It's not immoral to have your hair showing, and in fact, young unmarried women often did not cover their heads. But the married woman would cover her head to show, I have this relationship now with one man. Okay, so culturally then, for the woman to get up in prayer or prophesying and supposedly be showing respect to God by removing what was on her head, At the same time, she is communicating a certain disrespect for her husband. She is removing that thing that indicates that she sees herself as his and his alone. So I think Paul is saying, if you're going to do that, you might as well go all the way and shave it off. And what do I mean by all the way? I think that the idea would have been, we know that this was practiced in certain situations. Again, the historical evidence is spotty for how widespread this was and where and so on. But one of the things that we know at this time, at least in certain cultural situations, is that for a woman to have her head shaved off was a punishment given to an adulterous woman. That is, the woman's hair is her beauty. It belongs to her husband in the sense that she is his and her body is his. Now, it's also true that his body is hers, as Paul would say. But in this case, the symbol of it is the hair. And she has misused her beauty by giving herself to someone else. And the punishment was to remove her hair, to take her beauty from her, to mark her as a woman now who has lost her beauty because she misused it, or something like that. And so I think Paul might be saying something like, if you're going to remove your head covering and treat your hair as if it is not reserved for your husband, but it's free for everyone, you might as well go all the way and shave it off. Not just the mark of I am available for all, and I'm disregarding what this says about my relationship with my husband, but you might as well shave it off and you know, as if you had gone all the way, as if you had actually abandoned your husband and gone off with someone else. Now, there are some who argue differently here. They would argue that the issue is whether you look masculine or not, that if you're going to act like a man, you might as well go all the way and cut your hair off. And that's possible. As I would put the argument together right now, I think it's more likely that it's the first one, but it's challenging to put that together. Okay, but I think it is helpful to understand that the issue is the cultural idea of what it meant for a married woman to cover her hair, a part of her beauty, to indicate that she was a married woman and that her beauty was reserved for her husband. I think that's a significant cultural thing to understand, because that's going to help us, I believe, when we get down and Paul seems to take off on this tangent and starts talking about long hair towards the end of the passage. The cultural situation I've described, I think, is going to help us see what it is that he's getting at there. Okay, I've come to what is supposed to be the end of our time, and I have only just managed to cover the minor question that I described. The place I want to go next is to talk about that major question: what are the unchanging principles that Paul appeals to or implies in his response to this cultural situation? This is the more important question for us. I mean, probably at this point you're saying, okay, so culturally back then the head covering had that significance. Let's suppose that I'm right, that that's the case. It doesn't have that significance anymore. It's not that Paul's saying that it is immoral for a woman to show her hair, because in the culture, as we would understand it, an unmarried woman would have shown her hair, and that wasn't considered to be immoral. It was the idea that the married woman is communicating something in the situation. So it seems to be just a cultural practice, that there's something being communicated culturally there, and it is not communicated with us anymore. So what's the big deal? The big deal then to us is, first of all, I would say, I don't think that women are under any obligation by what Paul said here, therefore, to cover their heads when they pray or prophesy. But more importantly, the big deal is Paul now is going to go on to say something about the relationship of men and women and the way God has created them that is his justification for why it is that the woman should keep her head covering on in this situation. And that's the part that is of most interest to us, because those are the principles. If I understood clearly what principles Paul was appealing to, then we could understand in our own culture what sort of implications might that have. That's the question that we're most interested in, and that's the question that we don't have time to talk anything about right now. I didn't necessarily plan it this way, although I do have to say that the fact that the most important question we didn't have time to get to today means that I have one more week to think about it, which is good. So I think I will stop there. And we're out of time, but we did start a little late. So if there is one question maybe that someone has, let's just take one, and then we'll take Logan, and then we should go. And then next time I'll try to leave some time for questions, although that's going to be hard.
So in pagan practice and pagan temples, a person could walk in there, regardless of their marital status, and behave as if they were not married.
Well, yes, although, see, what I'm saying is the evidence is kind of spotty. It seems strongest that married Jewish women would have covered their heads. Whether married Greek women had a strong practice of covering their heads to indicate that they were married is more of a question, and the same with the Romans. So what would it have communicated? Is it that things were getting kind of lax and it would have sort of communicated that, but nobody cared? Or I don't know. It's very hard to know how to interpret what evidence we have to know in the Greek setting or in the Roman setting, what would that have communicated? I don't know the answer to that question. I wish I did. Does anybody here, Jack or anyone, have any historical information to contribute to this that would change the picture that I'm talking about? I didn't think so. Okay. Well, next time, like I say, we will talk about what I think is the most significant part of what Paul has to say here for us. This is his appeal to Genesis about the way, as he says it, the woman was created for the sake of the man and not the other way around. That has to be an intriguing statement, however we understand it. And we'll try to make some sense of those statements next week.